Just before we begin, I want to bring to everyone's attention a very special women's shalashudas that we're going to be having this Shabbos. I invited one of the heroes from Camp Simcha. Her name is Bruchi Rosen from Manchester. She's going to be here for Shabbos. She's having her surgery as part of her treatment for cancer. She's having a surgery that was scheduled to be 2 weeks ago. Unfortunately, she got COVID and was unable to have the surgery. And now she's pushing it off until after Tisha B'Av. But she is a tremendous young woman who has a phenomenal story, who speaks beautifully, and who has an incredible amount of emunah and a lot for us to gain from. So she will be speaking this Shabbos afternoon at 6 p.m. for women. I venture to say if a couple of men sneak in the back and listen, I assume she won't faint. But I think it's very special. It's a really special opportunity. She's coming together with her mother as well, who has written a lot of poems about her relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout this entire journey. I think it's an incredibly inspiring story, and everyone who comes will certainly be uplifted from her words. This evening's Divrei Torah should be a schus for a refuah shlema for Gavriel Yehoshua ben Nechama Chana HaKohen, the refuah shlema. And that is the son of a very dear friend of mine, Tzvi and Nechama Katz. And tonight's shiur is not only as a schus for his refuah shlema, but it's actually about a shaila that they called me about. So about a week ago or so, their son, who was a 19-year-old young boy, very healthy, had nothing wrong with him at all, had a clean bill of health, called his parents that he wasn't feeling well. He was actually a staff member in one of the camps here. His father picked him up, realized right away from all of his years of experience in Hatzalah and saving other people's lives, he realized that there was something very, very seriously wrong with his son, took him to the hospital, and I think within a couple of hours, his son was in emergency neurosurgery. Baruch Hashem, I think the reports have come back that he's doing quite well. He still needs to recover, and we hope that he will have a refuah shlema bekarov. But Tzvi actually called me with a fascinating shaila last week. Right after his son's surgery had completed, Tzvi called with a shaila that I think shows the amount of Yiras Shamayim that a family has. His question was, am I able to put tefillin on my son? And I think that this is a fascinating question because there are so many different components you need to tackle when you think about this question. Question number one that we need to think about is it appropriate to put tefillin on someone who is sleeping? He was in a medically induced coma, obviously. The hospital obviously has to put someone to sleep when they do a neurosurgery. The patient cannot be awake. So while his son was still asleep, that's question number one. Is it appropriate to put tefillin on somebody who is not awake? Now, this happens all the time. I happen to be speaking about this particular case, but this is something that we get all the time. You have a patient who's in the hospital, let's say he's 90 or 100 years old or 119 years old, and the family members feel very uncomfortable that their parent has not been able to put on tefillin for many, many months, and they want to know, for the betterment of our father, would we be allowed to put tefillin on the patient? So that is a very important question, number one. Question number two is, he now has a big bandage around his head, and the question is, would he be allowed to put on a shel rosh on top of the bandage? Obviously, you can't put the shel rosh on the head itself. Would you be allowed to put it on the bandage? Assuming that you would not be able to do that, which is a major assumption, as we'll see in a moment, and let's say you can only put a shel yad on, are you allowed to put on a shel yad without a shel rosh, or do we assume that it's all or none? Do we assume that the mitzvah of tefillin is one major category that has two components, tefillin shel yad, tefillin shel rosh? If you can't do both, you can't do either. That is question number, I don't know what we're up to, two and three and four, whatever, wherever we are. When you're only putting on one, if you're only going to wear the tefillin shel yad, in this case, or sometimes you have in the opposite direction, somebody has a cast, or for whatever reason is unable to wear a tefillin shel yad, only can put on a tefillin shel rosh, assuming they could wear one, which bracha will they make? Do they make one bracha? Do they make two brachas? Do they make no brachas? That's the fourth question. And finally, is one allowed to say Kriya Shema without wearing tefillin? So sometimes tefillin is just simply not a possibility. Now obviously a woman who doesn't wear tefillin, there's no question, but the Gemara does discuss a man who has the ability to wear tefillin and chooses not to wear tefillin, is he allowed to recite Kriya Shema? Let's try to break this down. I think it's a very fascinating and important shaila. Again, not only because I think it's beautiful that they asked it in this situation, but I think because there's a lot to learn for other similar or a little bit different situations that may arise in other circumstances. Once again, we hope that our Divrei Torah this evening will be as a schus l'refuah shlema for Gavriel Yehoshua ben Nechama Chana HaKohen, and we hope that he will continue to have a very positive trajectory in his journey in the hospital and that the right shluchim will be sent his way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have a lot of rachmanus on him. So number one, let us begin this year with the following halacha. First question that we asked is, are you allowed to put tefillin on somebody who is asleep? That is a very interesting question. We turn to a Gemara Maseches Menachos, Daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis, where the Gemara says that when one wears tefillin, you have to make sure, lemashmesh b'chol shah, you have to make sure that at different intervals along the way while you're wearing the tefillin, you have to be memashmesh. I don't know what the right English word is. You have to touch it, you have to feel it, you have to move it around a little bit. Not that you should move it out of its place, but you have to notice that you're wearing the tefillin. Why do we do that? Says the Gemara, it's a kal v'chomer from the tzitz. We know that the Kohen Gadol used to wear a big plate of gold on his head. On the plate of gold it said, Kodesh LaHashem. It had the shame, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, had the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the plate. And the Gemara says, if a Kohen Gadol has to make sure that he pays attention when all he has is one shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on his head, imagine a pair of tefillin where you have so many names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that are encapsulated in this box of tefillin. Certainly you have to be very mindful, you have to be attentive, you cannot be distracted, you have to make sure to be totally engaged and focused in the tefillin while they are on your head, the same way that a Kohen Gadol has to do when he has the tzitz on his forehead as well. Now there's a beautiful idea from the Kedushas Levi, from the Bardichever, where he writes that the Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that the same way that we wear tefillin every day, the Gemara says HaKadosh Baruch Hu wears tefillin every day as well. Now what does that mean? Interesting question. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have a body, where does he wear the tefillin? What does he put them on? Very good question. But the Gemara says, metaphysically or metaphorically, whatever it is, we assume HaKadosh Baruch Hu has tefillin that he wears every day. Ask the Gemara. In our tefillin it says what? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. What does it say in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tefillin? He talks about himself? Probably not. So what does it say in his tefillin? Writes the Gemara, Mikam Chayisrael Goy Echad Ba'aretz. That's what it says in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tefillin, which is this reciprocal relationship that we pledge our allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by wearing the tefillin. We say, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. He in turn does the same by reciting the beautiful words, Mikam Chayisrael Goy Echad Ba'aretz. So says the Bardichever. The same way there's a halacha that we're not allowed to have a hesach hadas when we wear the tefillin, that we're not allowed to ignore the tefillin while we're wearing it, so too HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we demand of Him, don't ever forget, Mi Kamcha Yisrael Goy Echad Ba'aretz. The same way you expect of us at all times to remember Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, so too we expect of you in return that you have to have at all times on your mind, Kavayachal, this idea of Mi Kamcha Yisrael Goy Echad Ba'aretz. Beautiful idea. The Imre Emes, one of the Ger Rebbes, tacked onto that idea, and he said, well, let's take it further. There is a halacha by tefillin that it has to be written, Me'ar Echad. Tefillin has to be created from one piece of leather, one piece of skin. You cannot have a bunch of different pieces sewn together. You have to have one piece of skin that makes up the tefillin. How is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tefillin going to be commensurate to that halacha of Me'ar Echad? Explain the Imre Emes, the answer is, if Klal Yisrael is going to be able to be our Echad, if we're going to be able to be connected, if we're going to feel that we are one, then it's Mikam Chay Yisrael Goy Echad Ba'aretz. We are the art. We are the fabric. We are the tefillin of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's our job to make sure that it's made Me'ar Echad. Very nice, beautiful ideas. It's all Divrei Hashkafa, Divrei Machshava. But the bottom line is, the Gemara says we have to make sure that Hesach Hadas is something that does not happen while we're wearing the tefillin. Now, the big discussion in Tosas and Maseches Yuma, is this a din d'oraisa? Is it only a din d'rabbanan? Tosas gets into a very interesting discussion because Tosas writes, how can you compare the tzitz to the tefillin? After all, the tzitz, it says Kodesh LaHashem, and the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is exposed. Whereas in the tefillin, the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is wrapped up inside of the tefillin. It's concealed. It's inside the box. So maybe these two halachas are not comparable at all. Maybe the reason why the Kohen Gadol has to be so careful is because emblazoned on his head is the shame HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everyone who looks at him sees it. But a tefillin would not be the same. Tosas gets into all discussion. From there, Tosas launches into a discussion whether or not this would be a din d'oraisa, din d'rabbanan. For our purposes, it doesn't matter. That's for another shiur. But right now, what we know is, whether it's a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan, the Gemara clearly says we have a halacha, that there's an isser of hesach hadas. You're not allowed to be inattentive when wearing a pair of tefillin. Be it as it may, there's this expectation that we have to be focused, we have to be mindful when we wear the tefillin. Now there's an extremely problematic Gemara in Maseches Sukkah. Why? The Gemara needs some sort of explanation, because based on everything we said, this Gemara does not fit at all. Writes the Gemara as follows, HaNichnas Lishon Bayom. Somebody is having a very busy day. In the middle of the day, I'm very exhausted, so I go for a little nap. Says the Gemara, I'm going for a nap in the middle of the day. Now, if I want to leave my tefillin on, I can leave them on. If I want to take them off, I take them off. What do you mean, leave them on? How can you leave them on? The Rosh of Maseches Brachos asks, how can you leave it on? The Gemara just told me you're not allowed to have Hesach Hadas when you wear the tefillin. Ein lecha Hesach Hadas galu mizeh, you're going to sleep. So how can you leave your tefillin on when you go to sleep? How do you explain this Gemara? So the Rosh explains in the name of Rabbeinu Yonah. He basically redefines this concept of Hesach Hadas. And he says, no. Hesach Hadas does not mean that I always have to be mindful and attentive of what I'm doing while I'm wearing tefillin. No. Even if I'm oblivious, even if I'm absent, even if I'm sleeping, that's not a Hesach Hadas. What the Gemara means to say is I'm not allowed to have Kalus Rosh V'schok. I'm not allowed to be in a frivolous mood. I'm not just allowed to be involved in meaningless conversation while I have the tefillin on. That's what Hesach Hadas means. But what if I'm not thinking anything? What if I'm just being? I'm just parav. So in that situation, writes the Rabbeinu Yonah, that's not called Hesach Hadas. I don't have to actively think about the tefillin every moment that I'm wearing them. I just have to make sure that while I'm wearing the tefillin, I don't get involved in something that is beneath the dignity of what tefillin is supposed to be worn for. But outside of that, it wouldn't be a problem. And therefore, writes Rabbeinu Yonah, when it comes to the Gemara telling us about someone going to sleep while wearing the tefillin, that wouldn't be a problem. Why? Because after all, going to sleep, I'm not thinking about anything. Maybe I'm dreaming about things, but I'm not consciously really thinking about anything at all. And therefore, that would not be a problem. The Ramah discusses this, actually, in Hilchos Shabbos, which is not where it should be. Why? You don't wear tefillin on Shabbos. So why is it in Hilchos Shabbos? What? On Sukkot? Okay. That's a discussion. But let's talk about Shabbos. So why is this in the Ramah in Hilchos Shabbos? When would you have a situation where the halacha of tefillin should show up in Hilchos Shabbos? So it's actually a trick, because it's in Siman Reish Nun Beis, which is very beginning of Hilchos Shabbos. It's in Hilchos Erev Shabbos. Why is it there? So there it says that as it's getting dark outside, let's say you have people, you go to Yerushalayim sometimes, you see people who wear tefillin all day. So Erev Shabbos, when do they take the tefillin off? Before Shabbos. So at what point on Erev Shabbos do you say, hey, it's getting too close to Shabbos, you got to take it off? Says the Gemara, you're allowed to wear tefillin on Erev Shabbos until it gets dark outside, until the sun goes down. What do you mean? Aren't you afraid that maybe he's going to forget and he's going to wear his tefillin on Shabbos, which is not allowed? Says the Gemara, no. Since you're not allowed to have Hesach Hadas, the person's not going to be oblivious to what he's doing. He's paying attention while he's wearing the tefillin, so he's never going to make a mistake. Says the Ramah, what do you see from there? What do you see from there? The Ramah says this would seem to be against the concept of Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah told us Hesach Hadas does not mean that at every moment while I'm wearing my tefillin I have to think about it. That's not what it means. What it means is that I'm not allowed to have Kalas Rosh. So maybe you have a very serious Jew who's not having Kalas Rosh, but who's not paying attention to his tefillin. And therefore he's going to make a mistake on Erev Shabbos. Says the Ramah, how is he allowed to wear his tefillin on Erev Shabbos when maybe he's going to make a mistake, wear it on Shabbos itself? Anyway, this is a discussion in the Rishonim, exactly how do we define this prohibition of Hesach Hadas. Other Rishonim disagree with Rabbeinu Yonah, and they say, no, Hesach Hadas means exactly what you thought it means, which is, in the Lashon of the Rambam, Lo yasiach daito mehem afilu rega echad. While I'm wearing my tefillin, I have to pay attention the entire duration of the time that I'm wearing the tefillin, which is a discussion in the Rishonim. Then how do you explain what does a kohen do while he's doing the avod in the Beis Hamikdash? He's wearing his tefillin. How can he wear his tefillin if he's supposed to be paying attention to the karbanos and he's supposed to be focusing on that? How can he focus on two things at the same time? Interesting question. Again, for another time, Mirtz Hashem, Meheri Yibana Beis Hamikdash, we'll talk about it. But the Rambam clearly says that this din of Hesach Hadas means we need to be clearly focused and attentive to the tefillin the entirety of the time that I'm wearing them. Not just that I shouldn't have schok for Kalas Rosh. I have to actually be focused on it. And therefore, based on that, you have to ask yourself, how does the Rambam explain this halacha that we're told that one is allowed to go to sleep with the tefillin on? That would be a direct violation to what the Rambam says. Anyway, you look in the Sefer Pri Yitzchak by Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer, where he gives a fantastic explanation to be miyashiv the Rambam and explain based on the Gemara. The bottom line is, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, if you look in the Mishnah Berurah, it's clear that one is supposed to be very careful, that when wearing the tefillin, you're not supposed to have a Hesach Hadas. And the Shulchan Aruch quotes both of these opinions in the Rishonim. Some Rishonim say this is what it means, some Rishonim say that is what it means, but certainly when somebody is sleeping in a medically induced coma, when somebody is still under the influence of whatever they inject into you, obviously that is something that would disqualify them entirely from having tefillin on, and that would not even be an option. That would not even be a question in our minds. You're not allowed to wear tefillin when one is sleeping, when one is not awake and aware of what it is that they are doing. Now we turn to question number two, and that is, what happens when one is unable to wear both a shel yad and a shel rosh? for whatever reason, is there any value in wearing one? Or do you say either all or none? If you can't wear both, you can't have either. So this is something that is discussed explicitly in the Gemara Maseches Menachos, and the Gemara says it goes in both directions. It's the same halacha. Writes the Gemara Maseches Menachos, Tfilo shal yad, eina ma'akeva shal rosh, and the shal rosh is not ma'akev the shal yad. The Gemara says if you only have the ability to wear one of the two, that would not be a problem at all. If for whatever reason you have a problem that you can't wear the shal yad, you have a problem you can't wear the shal rosh, do what you can. You should put on one or the other. Whichever one is able to be worn is good. And that is the way the Rishonim paskin lahalacha based on this Gemara, that the tefillin are not ma'akvin ze es ze. We don't assume that you have to have both in order to be mekayim the mitzvah of one. Now, there's a major discussion in the Rambam. How do you decide when we count something as two separate mitzvahs and when you count it as one? The Rambam and many other Rishonim made a list of what the 613 mitzvahs actually are. Now you say, well, it's pretty easy. Go through the Chumash and you'll figure it out. It's not so easy. First of all, the Ramban, on the very first page on his commentary on that Rambam, says, who told you the number 613 is even correct? Maybe that's not even the right number. Maybe there's more, maybe there's less. Now all of us are looking, what do you mean? We all know Taryag Mitzvah, 613 mitzvahs. The Ramban says, not so clear. So that itself is a dispute. Who said there are 613? Once you get over that hurdle, you have to figure out what's counted and what is not. So here, would you count tefillin as two mitzvahs or as one mitzvah?
Well,
is
that the machlokas why you'd have to make two brachas?
Not exactly. So the question here is, when you're talking about minyan ha-mitzvahs, we'll get to the brachas in a minute, how do you figure out how do you make the count? Let's say, for example, we have a mitzvah of kibud av va'em. Is that two mitzvahs or one mitzvah?
One mitzvah?
What do you mean? I have a father and a mother. We just had a camper in camp who has two mothers. No? So it's not always a given that kibud av va'em. Sometimes it's kibud aim va'em, right? So in this case, you have a situation where, a regular case where you have kibud av va'em, right? Where we don't have to give our pronouns for those who are following the news this week, right? Anybody know what I'm talking about? What?
You would have 11 commandments instead of two.
So that's the question. Kibud av va'em, we all would say, is one, right? What does it mean? One general idea. I should be mechabed my parents. And that includes grandparents, that includes older brother, includes all the people who are included in that list, in-laws, whoever it may be, that's all an extension of one general idea, kibud av va'em. What would you say, let's say, kriya shema every day? We have a mitzvah to say kriya shema in the morning, mitzvah to say kriya shema at night. So is that two mitzvahs or one mitzvah? Do you say, well, there's one mitzvah every day of accepting upon myself all malchus shamayim. How do I do that? By saying kriya shema. How many times a day do I do it? Well, that's just a detail. Once in the morning, once at night. But the general mitzvah is one. So this is a major question in the Rambam. How do you figure out what is considered two, what is considered one? The mitzvah of tzitzis. Every day we have a mitzvah to wear tzitzis. Is that a mitzvah that's one because you have to wear tcheles and lavan? Is that all combined into one mitzvah? Or do you say, no, tcheles is one mitzvah, lavan is another mitzvah, and it happens to be that they coincide and they coexist and you wear them together, but those are two different mitzvahs. This is a very interesting discussion in general in the Rambam. How do you figure out the structure? How do you figure out the pattern of where we count something as two and where perhaps it's counted as one? But be it as it may, we assume over here, clearly in Shulchan Aruch it says, the tefillin are not ma'akvin ze'ezeh. If you only have an opportunity to wear one, you will do that, and you do not hold yourself back from both of them just because one of them cannot be worn. So now we move on to the next issue, and that is when we talk about a chatzitza while wearing tefillin. So let's start with the question that we're talking about in our case is, you have somebody who just had a neurosurgery, and now he has a big gauze bandage around his head. He has to wear that for, I believe, a couple of weeks, or at least a couple of days. The question then becomes, what do you do about such a thing? Would that be a chatzitza? Would that be in the way from wearing one's tefillin? Now, obviously it goes without saying, this has to be with the permission of the doctors. I don't know how it works. I don't know if it's going to put an added pressure on a person's head to have a tefillin on. Obviously, then if the doctor says it's not safe and not healthy, then you don't do it. Question here is, let's say it's not a problem. The doctors say, no, it wouldn't be an issue at all. You can put something on his head for a couple of minutes. Not a problem, nothing to be concerned about. Assuming that that is the case, which I don't know. You have to ask a doctor who knows. But assuming that's the case, that it's not dangerous or uncomfortable for the patient, is that something, after the patient wakes up, that would be allowed? That is the question. So let's start with a little bit more of a common case. Neurosurgery is not the norm. Obviously, it happens every so often, but that's not the norm. What happens far more often is somebody breaks their arm and they have a cast. So what happens when somebody is not able to wear the tefillin directly on the arm? So the Rush writes in the Tshuva that the answer is, the Pasuk says, you have to wear the tefillin, la'os al yadecha. You have to wear it on your arm. Now he says, al yodecha means it has to be directly on your arm, without anything that is going to be a hefsik, without anything that is going to be in the way between your arm and the tefillin. How does he know that? How does the Rosh know that that's true? Just because it says al yodecha? He learns it from Bigdei Kohuna. What does it say by Bigdei Kohuna? The Torah tells us that a kohen has to wear the begadim yilbash al bisaro. He has to wear it on his skin. And the Gemara learns from there, the Bigdei Kohuna have to be directly on the body of the Kohen. You're not allowed to have anything in between. And from there, the Rosh learns, the same way that Al Bisaro there means directly on the Kohen's body, so too, Al Yadecha here means it has to be directly on your arm. There cannot be anything in the way. And this is quoted Lahalacha in Shulchan Aruch. Now the Rashba qualifies the statement and he says, well, he brings various sources to prove that when we say that there's not allowed to be a chatzitza, it only means where the bias of the tefillin is, where the actual box of the tefillin is. But what about the ritzuas? Let's say somebody has an IV line here, where somebody has a cast along the way on the arm, not on the muscle, but on the rest of the arm. That, the Rashba says, would not be a problem. Take, for example, many people wear a watch. Would there be a problem to wear a watch when wearing tefillin? The sources are clear that it's not a problem. There's a fascinating story that I've told many times, and I'm never sure whether or not I should say it, because the story actually is a bizillion of a story a little bit, but the truth is that it's printed in one of Rabbi Avadia Yosef's tshuvas, so it's already out there. I'm not publicizing the story any further. It is what it is. So the Rabbi Avadia Yosef writes in a footnote in one of his svarim how he had so much respect and so much adulation for one of the great gedolim in Yerushalayim, that was the Dovav Meisharim, the Chabina Rav. And he said he was a phenomenal Talmud Chacham and such a great tzaddik. And he said he was once reading through his tshuva sefer, and he saw that he writes a tshuva about wearing a watch when you're wearing tefillin. And he says, if somebody wears a watch while they wear the tefillin, you're not mekayim the mitzvah, it's a chatzitza, it's a terrible thing, how can you do that? Rav Avadia said he's scratching his head, he's going through all the sources, and he says he couldn't have made a mistake. So how could it be? So he's trying, he's going over the sugya again, trying to figure out, how did he get that? How did he come to that conclusion? He couldn't understand. It doesn't make sense. It says clearly in the Rishonim, as long as something's on your arm, not at the place where the bias, where the actual box of the tefillin is, it's not a problem. Rabbi Avadia says, finally, after working on it so hard, he decided he's going to go visit the Chabina Rav. He's going to ask him. So he knocks on his door and he says, I nechnasti lakodesh panima. He says, I came inside and I had such a charada. He says, I was so nervous to talk to him. He's such a gaon. He says, he walks up to him and he starts talking to him about the sugya. He says, well, you know, the Rishonim say it's not a problem if you have a chatzitza on your hand. It's only a problem if you have a chatzitza on your muscle. Anyway, back and forth, Chabina Rav says, yeah, that's correct. So he says, I don't understand. If you're agreeing with everything I said, how did you write in a tshuva that somebody who wears a watch when they have tefillin on their arm, it's a problem? He says, well, 1 second, where do you wear a watch? He says, what do you mean? He says, oh, I thought you wear a watch on the muscle. So the Chabina Rav said, he thought you wear a watch on a muscle. It was back in the early 1900s. Nobody had watches, apparently. They had pocket watch. He never heard of a wristwatch. So he said, somebody told him there's this thing called a watch. So that's interesting. My father showed this to me actually when I was very young. He showed me this footnote. I think in the later editions of Rabbi Avadia Sefer, they took out the footnote. They took out the story. But my father showed it to me and he said, the point of the story is, before you pass a shaila, you have to know what you're talking about. You have to ask somebody, what's a watch? You have to know what it is. I remember, actually somebody related to you told me the story, that he was once by Reb Chaim Kanievsky for Shabbos, Shabbos meal or something, and he said somebody at the table asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky about playing basketball on Shabbos. Your nephew told me this. They asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky about playing basketball on Shabbos, and Reb Chaim asked them, well, what is it? They told him there's two teams, a basket here, this side, that side, and you take a ball, you bounce it back and forth. So he said, I don't understand the shaila. Why can't you just put the ball in the basket before Shabbos? Then there's no question. So if you're Reb Chaim Kanievsky and you have no idea what basketball is, so, you know, you don't know how to answer such a shaila. It's a different kind of question. I remember Rav Asher Weiss told me that he, a number of years ago, remember when Reb Aaron Leib Steinman came to America on a whirlwind of a trip? He went to L.A., he went here, and he was in a few locations in the United States. So they had brought Rav Asher Weiss along to be the translator, which is beneath him, but okay. They brought him in. It was the Gerer Rebbe and Reb Aaron Leib Steinman, and Rav Asher Weiss was supposed to be the translator. So they were in Los Angeles. And Rav Asher said they had a get-together with all the Mechanchim in L.A., and the Rabbeim in L.A., you know, have a certain relationship with many of the Talmidim, many of the students, and a lot of them play ball together with the kids. That's the way they relate to them. Okay, good or bad, whatever it is, that's what they do. So they asked Reb Aaron Leib Steinman in a discussion about chinuch. So they asked him, what do you think about playing ball with the kids? And Rav Asher said he's sitting there listening to this question. He's like, you know how many hoops I have to go through to even begin to explain to him the premise of this question? how would a Rebbe ever dare in Bnei Brak? How would a Rebbe ever dare? There's no basketball court in Bnei Brak. So he said, now I'm going to have to explain to him what a basketball court is, what a basketball game is. Then I'm going to have to explain to him whether or not this is something that's appropriate. The relationship that the Talmidim in Los Angeles and the modern Orthodox high schools have with the kids, with the Rabbeim, is nothing at all similar to what Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinman is familiar with. So he's like, he said he decided to just dodge the question and translate something else that wasn't asked to try to get Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinman's opinion on something else. So that's important. Here says the Shulchan Aruch, you're not allowed to have a chatzitza when wearing the tefillin, but it's clear it's only a problem when you have a chatzitza on the muscle, not a problem when you have a chatzitza on the rest of the arm. So what happens, very common shaila, when somebody has a cast on their arm, what are you supposed to do? So if you look in Shulchan Aruch in the Mishnah Berurah, it says as follows. If you have a full arm, full length cast, all the way up, I don't know, what's the norm? When they put a cast on, it's usually all the way up the muscle, or it depends where the break is. So if the cast is full length, all the way up the muscle, and it's covering even that spot, so the Shulchan Aruch seems to say he should wear the tefillin without reciting a bracha, because there, that's really a chatzitza. You should put the tefillin on anyway, but you should do it without a bracha. On the other hand, if you have somebody who just has a cast that goes up most of the arm, but the muscle is free, the muscle is open, then you put on the tefillin with a bracha, because you're able to have the bias of the tefillin directly on top of the skin. So now, this is all with regard to tefillin shel yad. What about tefillin shel rosh? In our case, as we mentioned, you have somebody who went through a neurosurgery, and now they have, on the circumference of their head, now they have a gauze that's wrapped all around. Are you allowed to put tefillin, again, assuming that medically it's sound and medically safe to do so, are you allowed to put tefillin on top of that or not? So what would you say? So this is interesting. The Rashba writes, when we talk about a chatzitza by the mitzvah of tefillin, that is only limited to the shel yad. Why? Because the Torah says, ukshartan la'os al yadecha. And from there, the Gemara says, al b'saro by the big day kuhuna means it has to be directly on. And from there, the Rosh extrapolates that al b'saro means it has to be on his body by the Kohen. So al yadecha means it has to be on his arm when he's wearing the tefillin. Writes the Rashba, it doesn't say that by the tefillin shel rosh. What does it say by tefillin shel rosh? What? V'hayu l'tatav es ben einecha doesn't say al einecha. Doesn't say on your head. And therefore he said, the Rashba disagrees with the premise, and he says, this whole idea of chatzitza is only applicable when we talk about a shel yad, but not by a shel rosh. There's no problem at all. The Rosh writes, the Rashba says, you want to wear a hat while you're wearing the tefillin, and you want to put the tefillin on top of a light hat? That would be fine. Fascinating. That's a fascinating din. That's what the Rashba says. Now, the Rashba even takes it a step further, and he says, the Torah says, so it says that when you wear the tefillin shel rosh, people should see the tefillin shel rosh. Says the Rashba, wouldn't that be the greatest thing for you to do when you're wearing a hat? Put the tefillin on top of your hat. Why? This way more people are going to notice it. More people will see it. Don't cover it over with your talus. You should wear it on top. That's what the Rashba says. And he argues with the whole premise, which is so familiar to us, that obviously, you're not allowed to have a chatzitza when you wear your tefillin, says the Rashba, not so fast. Maybe that's only limited to the tefillin shel yad, and it does not carry over to the tefillin shel rosh. Interesting. That's what he writes. This is quoted the halacha in the Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef says, let's say you have somebody who has alul linezilus. I don't know exactly what it is. The way the Achronim explained it is, somebody who has a very sensitive, rare illness, where they're going to get very cold, and they have to wear something that always keeps them warm. I don't know exactly what the comparison would be today. I don't know what we would call it. But in the days of the Beis Yosef, he describes this kind of illness where somebody always has to have his head covered. In such a case, says the Beis Yosef, you should rely on the Rashba. You should put the tefillin on top of the covering over your face, over your head, whatever you have to wear. Okay, what are you going to do? Says the Beis Yosef, you're going to never wear tefillin in your life? So that's what you should do. That's what the Beis Yosef says. So based on that, this would be a clear case that is the same as the Beis Yosef's case. The Shulchan Aruch writes this. If somebody has this kind of onus, somebody has this kind of very uncomfortable situation where their head is in a bandage, in that kind of case, we would assume that there's room to say that a person should follow the opinion of the Rashba, which is not the generally accepted opinion, but at least according to half of the Rishonim, you're going to be able to be mekayem the mitzvah of tefillin. So you put tefillin on, tefillin shel rosh, without making a bracha, but you're still able to wear them. What an amazing chiddush. So this actually comes up every so often when you have somebody who wears a wig, somebody who wears a toupee. So what are they supposed to do? So it's a chatzitza. So the real thing to do is take it off. You should really take it off. Now, that's very humiliating for a person who wants to wear a toupee. The reason why he's wearing it is because he doesn't want to be embarrassed. So he doesn't want everyone to know that he doesn't have a head of hair. So what it really says in the poskim is you should put on his tefillin at home without the toupee on. You're supposed to put on the tefillin and make a bracha. When you come to shul, then you're just faking it. Then you're just pretending to wear the tefillin. But really, the tefillin should be worn at home. You should say Kriya Shema with the tefillin on. But that's really the right thing to do. That's the way it goes. My father said he remembers there was a Rav who was a Musmach of YU, who was a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, and he said that it was well known, obviously he had a toupee that was not so good, it was very well known that he was wearing a wig, and he was not it was not natural looking like many people's wigs. This was something that was very clear that he was not wearing his own natural hair. So people asked him, how do you wear the tefillin? He says, no, I was in Rav Soloveitchik Shir, and he said, there's no problem of a chatzitza when you wear the tefillin Shel Rosh, only by the Shel Yam. So my father said, no, that's not what Rav Soloveitchik said. He was learning the Shulchan Aruch. As he was learning through the Shulchan Aruch, he said, there's one opinion like this, and there's one opinion like that. He explained the opinion of the Rush. He explained the opinion of the Rashba. But of course, we paskin that it is a chatzitza. You have to make sure to have nothing in the way. When you're stuck and you have extenuating circumstances like this case, then you can put the tefillin on top without a bracha, but you can put it on top of something, even though that would clearly be a chatzitza under normal circumstances. So that is with regard to that. And I think that that's a very reassuring sack. I think that's something that's very interesting. Now, for the final question, and we're over time already, but which bracha would you recite? That is a very interesting question. We know Ashkenazim and Sfardim differ in how they make a bracha on the tefillin. Ashkenazim have a minhag that they make a bracha lehaniach tefillin when they put on the tefillin shel yad, and they make a bracha al mitzvah tefillin when they put on the tefillin shel rosh. We do know also that when Ashkenazim do so, they also say Baruch Shem afterward. Why? Because we assume, we're not so clear about that second bracha. Why are we making a second bracha? Are we supposed to make a second bracha? Only one, or two, both? We're not exactly sure. The Gemara is very unclear in Maseches Menachos whether two brachas are supposed to be recited or one bracha is supposed to be recited. And that is something that the Rishonim debate very heavily. It's a major, major discussion in the Rishonim and in the Shulchan Aruch itself. And based on that, you have to ask yourself, what would the bracha actually be? When a person is only able to put on one, the Tefillin Shel Yad or the Tefillin Shel Rosh, would you say both brachas potentially? Because after all, both brachas are relevant to the tefillin. Normally we split them up. That's because you have two things to say them on. Now, if you would say, let me say both brachas when I'm only putting on one, that would be an anomaly. When was the last time you did a mitzvah and you recited two brachas on one mitzvah? That's a very unusual case. That's something we don't normally do. Normally every mitzvah requires a bracha and we make one bracha. Sometimes you tack on a shechianu, sometimes you put on something extra. But you don't usually make two birchas al mitzvah. So that would be very strange. If here in this case you would make a lehaniach tefillin and al mitzvah tefillin, that would be something that would be very unusual. But yet, that seems to be what the Shulchan Aruch does say. If you're stuck in a situation where you're only going to put on one, let's say you're only going to put on the shavrosh because you have a cast on the full arm, so then in a situation like that, it seems that you would make two brachas when putting on one box of tefillin on your head. And that is something just to think about. It's something very interesting because I think it's a very unusual case that we don't find in other situations. Anyway, I thought this was a fascinating discussion. I think it's important halachas that are relevant not only in this very extreme case, but something that does come up every so often in other situations as well. And once again, I hope that our Divrei Torah this evening will be a schus l'refuah shleima for Gavriel Yehoshua ben Nechama Chana HaKohen, and we should all be able to talk about happy things and share in simchas together with him.